It's time for Viewpoints on the Talk Station. Across the street, across the state, across the nation, and on the World Wide Web. Viewpoints is where you can express your point of view. And now, the host of Viewpoints, Lockwood Phillips.
It sounds so formal on a Friday, especially a nice warm summer Friday. Folks, this is not global warming. Calm down. This is summertime. We have this weather every... It's cyclical. It gets hot like this in July and August. And fortunately for us, it hasn't been muggy. We need to be very thankful of that. All right, my viewpoint for the day. Viewpoints here on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. Lockwood behind the mic. Mandy behind the board. Yes, behind the board is her last name. She is behind the board, though. The numbers are, if you'd like to join us this afternoon, 800-818-2255. It's Friday. She's having a hard time with her earphones. 800-818-2255. Carter at Craven, Pamlico, and Jones counties, a local call, 247-7282. Onslow County, 455-7222. And, of course, via email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. That's viewpoints with an S, viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. Or you can tweet us. I've got to turn on my tweet deck here in a moment. Twitter.com/TheTalkStation. And, of course, you can always tweet Dan Gaynor, who, by the way, is joining us. Dan Gaynor of the Business and Media Institute. Just tweet Dan Gaynor, G-A-I-N-O-R. Dan, I emailed something to you today, but for some reason it bounced back at me. Sorry, I will get it to you eventually on the interview I did yesterday. But before I get to that, I've just got to make note of this. I'm actually laughing. You know, the Jimmy Buffett is renowned for his coastal and his coastal efforts and his music, but now I'm just flabbergasted. Buffett, a supporter of President Barack Obama, said the roots of the spill, and of course we're talking about the oil spill in the Gulf, said the roots of the spill lie with the administration of former President George Bush, which was often criticized for being too cozy with the petroleum industry. You know, it's amazing. If there's volcano erupts, it's George Bush's fault. Dan, welcome to Viewpoints. This is funny. Dan, oh, well, wait a second. I thought we had Dan. Welcome to Viewpoints.
There we go. That works.
Yeah, it does. this is a hoot. I mean, if there's a dilemma, a crisis, a problem, blame Bush. It's easy. I love it.
Well, only if you're a celebrity or a journalist or a politician.
We know. I'm fascinated by this. There is this continuing refusal to accept reality. Dan, before we go to the, and I want to talk about the subject of the coverage of the Gulf Coast. Do want to remind everyone, Dan Gaynor joins us every Friday afternoon, if we can push the right buttons. Dan joins us.
You know, that almost, were this not radio and some idiot somewhere taping me, I would say something about somebody pushing my buttons, but I think I will take the high road in this, the new Weigel era.
In the new Weigel, yes. But the subject of the Gulf Coast, I'm just fascinated. Last evening, and I tried to get an email to you earlier today regarding the interview I did with Dale Benoit. He is the publisher of the Pequimans Gazette in Pequimans, Louisiana. And the frustration that he was expressing was palpable. The fact that the media is being denied access to any facilities and many of the sites where the cleanup is taking place still fascinates me. And I'm wondering, where is the outrage? Is there any outrage on that, Dan?
Well, there's not. There's increasing outrage by the White House press corps about the abuses they're getting from the Obama administration. But there's this theme. And everywhere you look, it's the Obama administration. This is, I was quoted on Fox last night, talking about the new DOD rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, that it makes me laugh. You know, every time I hear the Transparency Administration put one more brick in the wall around the White House. For people who remember the Watergate era, I used to be a big fan of Doonesbury because I thought it was very funny political humor. I didn't have to agree with it. It's not funny political humor most days now. I don't agree with it any more than I did then. It's just not funny. But Doonesbury did something classic. He built this wall around the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And then over time they had sandbags and your guard in place and stuff like that. It was exactly what had happened. So the perfect metaphor for what Nixon was doing. You know, digging his heels in and not talking to people and not dealing with people. And that's exactly what Obama's doing. There's a man who went a year without a press conference. He's shut out the press across the line. If you dare offend, you know, King Obama, the press corps comes down on you, and then so does the White House. It's amazing. It's like, do they not understand that this guy doesn't like them?
Well, not only that, he's using the media, but the thing I think that most disturbs me is subjects such as the Gulf Coast, where there is serious calamity, great catastrophe, and now we were talking with Dale Benoit last evening, and he pointed out if any journalist extends into that 40-foot buffer. I think it was a 40-foot. It may have been 60.
I think it's 65 feet.
65 feet. Okay. Okay, that's where the 40 comes from. It's a $40,000 fine. You know, that is really intimidating. And I'm fascinated by the failure of the press. And I'm wondering, Dan, where is the outrage? This is something that needs to be covered for a variety of reasons. One, the lives that it's impacting. Two, the story that it is. And then three, the knowledge that can be gained from watching this. Where is the outrage?
Well, there isn't enough outrage. And I mean,
I
think I would surprise people who know that I'm a media critic, you know, vouching for free press.
Right.
But I am. Can you imagine if George Bush, the president of the oil companies, as the media used to, you know, treat him, you know, this guy who's closely tied with the oil companies, can you imagine if he had shut out the media from this disaster? They'd be, you know, out there, in 20 boats abreast, daring the Coast Guard to stop them.
We're going to, by the way, just in response to the conversation I had yesterday, Dan, we hope to have somebody from the Coast Guard talking with us.
I'm sorry, but at this point, what cowards and hypocrites, both in the media and frankly in our government, that the Coast Guard would enforce a rule that's clearly designed to impinge on the freedom of the press is appalling. That the president would encourage these rules is a direct violation of the Constitution.
Our guest, Dan Gaynor, and I've got to mention again, if you're looking for coverage or, if you will, review of the media, go to businessandmedia.org. Spell out the word and, please, businessandmedia.org. And our website, of course, our guest, Dan Gaynor, Executive Director of the Business and Media Institute. We've got a caller standing by. Dan, let's go to Joe in Emerald Isle. Joe, welcome to Viewpoints. Thanks for being so patient and welcome, sir.
Oh, yeah. How you guys doing?
Fine.
Well, it's obviously bungled the cleanup down in the aftermath of the oil spill there in the Gulf, but you were talking about Jimmy Buffett saying the roots belong to George Bush.
Uh-huh.
Well, when you plant a tree, the roots are where it starts, correct?
Right.
This is one of the first oil wells drilled since Bush lifted the moratorium, isn't that correct?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it may. Okay. Yep.
It is. It is.
Well, if you're going to go back, let's go back to this this whole issue of drilling in the Gulf. The reason why we drill in the Gulf is because of libs who won't let us drill in places like Anwar or closer to shore.
But
and so,
just going
so
back
if you want to put the blame on the left, not the right.
Okay. Oh, no.
I don't think we really need to blame any one person, but I'm just kind of pointing out that for 30 years there was a drilling ban in place on offshore drilling.
And
the one guy that opened it up, the one president out of all those prior to him that opened it up was George Bush, and he did it right at the height of the gas crisis, pretty much we'll call it, because gas was nearing $5 a gallon,
right.
And it was in some parts of the country. So he went and opened up offshore oil drilling. And, you know, that was a big hurrah from the oil industry at the time. But, yeah, this is one of the very first wells drilled after that got lifted. So I mean, if you're going to blame Obama for the aftermath, you got to blame the guy before him for creating it. So, I mean, you know,
you got to blame the guy before him for creating the, you know, the. I mean, remember, we had Anwar approved. Anwar
right.
was approved by Congress and then vetoed by the Clinton administration.
Joe, I've got to argue with you on this one as well, and I appreciate your observation, but this goes all the way to an institution, and that is the Mineral Management Service, which has been too cozy. We've known this for quite some time, and it goes into four administrations. In reality, I think this is the other bothersome aspect of this. I don't think a president is to blame. I think what is a system is to blame. The thing that bothers me about the whole issue is not the blame game. The blame game sits really on part of the contractor and the oil company. But the real issue here, and the one that's frustrating and angering me the most, is the failure of the administration to really seek out and to seek answers, and in the process, as we said a moment ago, to be transparent about it. The fact that the media is being denied access, the fact that the stories... Oh, by the way, we were hearing the story last evening, Joe, I don't know if you heard it, and Dan has not had the opportunity. I tried to email him and failed. Dale Benoit pointed out that now the birds that are undergoing cleaning are now being shipped out of the area, so as to not be visible by the media. I don't understand this either.
Or are you sure they're not being shipped out so that they just don't end up right back in it?
No. They can be cleaned in the locality there in Plaquemines Parish. But as he pointed out, this is all being removed, so it's less of a visible story. And I think what's happening here, and again, my frustration and anger, is where's the media? And when it comes to being denied access to a perfectly legitimate public endeavor, well, as Dan pointed out, there's a little hypocrisy here and a little cowardice, and it's really, really disturbing. Joe, I don't
appreciate... Not a little. It's a lot.
Well, it
I
is a lot.
I do want to say one more thing.
All right,
in
real
regards
quickly.
To,
quickly, go for
know,
it.
The GOP now is criticizing this latest moratorium.
Yep.
And I have to say that's reckless of them, because until we find a way to figure out how to cap these wells, and when we have a problem like this, big.
Thanks very much. Talking with Dan Gaynor here of the Business and Media Institute a few moments ago off air, I was commenting that, and he's brought up another interesting observation on the issue of the Gulf Coast. Then we'll get into other media coverage here in a moment. But I commented to Dan that last evening I was talking to someone, and I had not intended to mention it on air, but I think I will. I was saying how incompetent the Carter administration was, and being old enough to remember it vividly, I'm flabbergasted at the incompetency of this administration, which I think is even worse than that of the Carter administration. And the caller I was speaking to last night commented and said, well, no, wait a second. The difference is not incompetence. The difference is Jimmy Carter really cared. Ooh. Dan Gaynor of the Business and Media Institute, our guest. Dan, your observation?
Well, I would actually say that the difference is after the Bush administration clearly did not handle New Orleans in a way that any one of us would have handled it, even though we would have had to step on local authority, which was also corrupt and incompetent.
Right.
But after that happened, you would think that the Obama administration would have learned a lesson and done better. I mean, it should have been a full court press instead of just, we'll get to it. Well, we're letting BP handle it. No. We've organized every ship in the world that will suck up this oil. We've got every expert from every oil company out there, you know, in meetings discussing possible fixes.
And yet, in the process of it all, he has more time to attend baseball games, golf outings, and variety of entertainment activities. You know, it is shameful, but the problem I have with this, Dan, and beating a dead horse, where is the media? All right.
Well, they're in his camp, and that's the problem.
Let's talk about other issues. CNN firing someone. Wow. Over a minor observation, I guess.
I would not say that was a not say that was a minor observation.
What happened to CNN? I thought they were above this sort of thing. I didn't think they would even respond to this kind of event. Share with the audience.
Well, here is Octavia Nasser, who was a senior editor for Mideast Affairs, senior correspondent, Mideast, whatever, for CNN.
Mm-hmm.
She tweeted, "Sad to hear the passing of Saeed Mohammed Hussein Fadallah, one of Hezbollah's giants I respect a lot." Yeah, but of course Fadallah led, you know, Hezbollah in the 1980s when they, of course, killed 240 American Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, they backed suicide bombings, and they're Hezbollah is one of the two big terror groups of the Mideast. And, you know, pretty much supporting a terror group, not something your average American kind of likes. Well, she tried to back out of it and didn't succeed. She got her, you know, hugely bigoted anti-Semitic self fired. And, you know,
I'm surprised CNN would do that because.
Well, she could, this is, you know, Hezbollah, remember, killed American Marines.
I don't care.
You know,
I'm sorry.
Can't get away with that. But the problem here is not that she got fired. The problem is she got hired. That for 2 decades she was working for CNN, tilting the coverage against, you know, those evil Zionists, of which I happen to be one, you know, proud supporter of Israel. But, I mean, here's somebody who liked Hezbollah. How the heck is she in your news organization? This is a terror group that killed Americans. You're an American news organization. You should be embarrassed.
Well,
and clearly they were.
They were. All right. Speaking of, I know it's amazing, going from the sublime to the ridiculous, LeBron James. I mean, it was amazing. That was, someone has described that as media worship. It's fascinating. I'm curious, did anything get watched last night other than ESPN?
Well, I'm sure somebody, I actually am not a big basketball fan. I'm anecdotally interested because he did decide to choose Miami, the land of better tax rates.
And, right.
And as a Baltimorean, I will say we don't really have any particular love for Cleveland. But, you know, again, this is all the people of Cleveland are just, I feel bad for them. They lost a star. He's a star, not the star. It's not like removing the star from the firmament and you suddenly all freeze mm-hmm. to death because you're not getting any heat for your planet. I mean, you know, get a grip. I didn't see anybody, I tweeted this last night, I didn't see anybody, say, you know, lamenting the loss of Mike Mussina when he went to the quite literally damn Yankees and proceeded to be 125-77 in the years ensuing, winning 20 games in his final year, 2008, with the Yankees. Nobody moaned for the poor Orioles that they lost. This is a quasi-free market. I say only quasi because, of course, baseball is a monopoly, so is football, so is
right,
basketball.
Right.
But so he didn't like where he worked. He got a better offer, not financially, but better because they had hired other guys so that he could potentially win a ring. After a certain point, when you have millions of dollars, the money becomes only, you know, just a way to keep score.
Right.
He clearly wanted to win, so he went to where they got, you know,
the better team,
Bosch and Wade, and he's hoping that they can win several championships. And if they do, who can fault him?
But I just was amazed at the buzz. And yet in the midst of it all, we have cartels running rampant across the Arizona border, and we have folks in Louisiana, maybe a little light humor, a little relief is good, but at the same time, I coming all the way back to that, the initial conversation on the subject of the Gulf Coast, the stories that aren't being told. Dan Gaynor, our guest of Business and Media Institute. By the way, you can tweet Dan at Dan Gaynor, G-A-I-N-O-R, and also, of course, see his articles on the Business and Media Institute website, businessandmedia.org. We've got a caller standing by. Let's go to Viola Newberg. Miss Viola, welcome. Viewpoints. Yes, ma'am.
Hey, but I got a question.
Uh-huh.
If supporting and respecting the enemy and is grounds for getting somebody fired,
mm-hmm.
when are we going to fire our president?
Well, there's a provision to do that. I don't think he is. I have a lot of issues with President Obama. I don't think he's done anything that I would consider to be impeachable, because what happens when you do that is you run into this, as soon as somebody gets elected, the other side moves to impeach him, and then we begin to look like a third world banana republic. We have a process. He did get elected. The process, however, allows 2 and 4 year corrections. The two-year mm-hmm. correction is coming up in November, mm-hmm. wherein his power can be extremely limited by him losing control of one or both houses of Congress. Should that happen, that serves as a mid-course correction. Right. If he learns from that, then maybe he gets reelected. If he doesn't, we have the four-year correction, and I think that works perfectly fair.
And I would also say, Viola, that in reality, and I'm a big critic of the administration, not of necessarily one individual, but a Congress that has just gone along for the ride. I think
yes, but our president apologizes for us.
He
kisses up to all these foreign leaders who are trying to wipe out America.
How much more
of a traitor can you get?
Well,
you can actually be an actual traitor. Try for a second, and I know this is hard because I find it hard myself. So I see your anger, but you know, look at it from their world. They didn't like the George Bush, I'm going to do things my way the highway American attitude.
Right.
So now they're trying to embrace the world. Okay, well, let them try. The world doesn't like America whether we embrace them or give them the finger. So what we'll find is, you know, after a couple of years of that they're not cooperating with us any, and that a good chunk of the world that doesn't like us only understands when America is strong, not when we're weak.
And we can change that, Viola, and I think it's a matter of how frustrated and how angry the public is. And it'd be interesting to see if, and I'm actually banking on the fact that, on the concept that the president hopes to have this Gulf issue solved by at least late August, and that by the time we get around to November, we will have already forgotten. The question is, do the voters have a good memory? We'll find out. Viola.
I sure hope so.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Dan, before we let you go, one last question. It has to do with the economy. Things are not looking good in the economy, yet we still don't see a full disclosure, if you will, a solid analysis of what we're seeing. And by the way, we're seeing now that there's the cost of national health care was in fact bogus. We are going to have more costs associated with it.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have more costs associated with everything. I'm going to say this. I truly mean this. For the sake of the country, not the sake of politics, I wish the economy would rebound and go great.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't expect it will. I look and see lots of negative news. I see unemployment. You know, the only reason unemployment isn't almost exactly 10%, 9.9, according to a lefty, you know, one of the lefty economic groups, is that basically so many people gave up the last month and just decided not to apply for jobs. The unemployment situation is bad. The long-term debt and deficit situation are bad. We've got a bad mortgage situation. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are a disaster. The only continued solution the Obama administration has is to throw more deficit spending at it. And, you know, so just spend your, you know, ruin the country for your children and grandchildren, and Americans aren't going for that either. So the smart way is to grow your way out of this. I just don't see, with all the government regulations and all the government taxes and expansion of government, any way that we can do that.
And the sad part of it, Dan, is, again, the absence of real coverage. Dan Gaynor of Business and Media Institute. And, Dan, before I let you go, and I thank you for being with us this Friday, I've just got to make one other observation. The Washington Post, I read an article yesterday which really kind of surprised me. Actually, it's a Wednesday article. I finally got to it yesterday. Labor unions have dominated spending on independent campaign ads so far this election season, despite recent Supreme Court decisions that freed spending by corporation, a Washington Post analysis shows. Is there a possibility that we're going to see true and analytical coverage in the elections coming up?
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Thank you very much. All right, Dan Gaynor of the Business and Media Institute, the website businessandmedia.org. And to remind you, Dan Gaynor, you can tweet him at Dan Gaynor. All right, Viewpoints on the Talk Station, FM 107 AM 1240. Dan, I'll chat with you briefly off air. You're listening to Viewpoints. Points on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240. An interesting story from the Wall Street Journal. Media and technology executives and investors are sounding new alarm bells about the economy, worried it could wipe out recent growth. In an interview Thursday morning at the Allen & Company Conference in Sun Valley, that's in Idaho, Chief Executive Martin Sorrell cited the possible widening of Europe's economic troubles along with the coming expiration of some tax cuts as among the fears of the media, entertainment, and technology executives attending the annual event. WPP is a major ad agency. And they also report on John Malone, Liberty Media, about his remarks as well, all feeling that possibly we may be on the wrong course when it comes to all the spending we have going on right now in this country. Well, talking about spending, well, North Carolina's spending as well. As a matter of fact, later in the program, we're going to be joined by Jeff Shaw of the North Carolina Justice Center, a progressive organization. Read that, liberal. We have had Jeff on numerous occasions. It's always pleasant to have on. He and I disagree, but we have a good time disagreeing. The report notes that the former BTC, that is the Budget and Tax Center Director, Elaine Mejia, who retired today or stepped out of her job, notes that the passage of the new state budget reflects the gradual erosion of the state's tax base in a deep, prolonged recession. Well, we know part of that we really will not disagree with. Deep, prolonged recession. Well, what's happening at the state level? We have to find out. We have Chris Hayes joining us of the JWP Civitas Institute on his way to Asheville as we speak. What are you doing in Asheville, Chris?
Hey, Lockwood. We're doing a candidate training session up here in Asheville, part of the series we've done around the state, getting candidates geared up and information and training they need to run effective campaigns this fall.
Okay, similar to the one that you conducted down in Wilmington several months back.
Exactly. We did one in Wilmington, one in Greenville. We got one in Asheville, and we did one in Raleigh earlier this year as well.
Okay, when am I supposed to be on the air up there? Okay, no, forget that. Chris Hayes, of course, JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org. Chris, you've been away for a few days. When you came back, were you sobered by what you saw happening in the legislature?
Well, having been through this, I don't know how many years now with the end of the session, it's a typical end of session for the General Assembly where they seem to be in no hurry to get things out, but in a hurry to get things done. Kind of contradictory there, but you know, we're still waiting on an ethics bill. They've been in session since May. They've known they needed to pass an ethics bill, and yet we're waiting for the last day to do things like that. So they seem to drag their feet on a lot of important issues and then try to shove it through at the very last minute.
Well, it has been, and of course, a real challenge for the governor. She's dealing with ethics issues in the Highway Patrol, and of course, has established a new ethics document that new Highway Patrol, all Highway Patrolmen will be forced to, or required, shouldn't say forced. If they don't sign it, they can go home without their paycheck, but that's all right. They are required, not forced, to sign this ethics document. And my response was, why not have the legislature sign a similar document, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for that. Wonder why not?
Probably none of them would want to do that. You know, the legislature doesn't like passing ethics new ethics legislation on themselves. And the Highway Patrol thing is an interesting thing. You know, one of the biggest problems here is the way it's structured is you can only promote from within. So you've got this culture of cronyism mm-hmm. that can't be replaced. You know, the governor is forbidden from hiring somebody into the commander of the Highway Patrol but from outside the Highway Patrol. So her hand is kind of forced on who she has to promote from within.
Interesting observation because there's been some concern about the fact that we only hire from within. But so there is, in fact, legislation that requires that.
Yeah, and that's a big problem. And, you know, to lead the Highway Patrol, you have to have experience in the Highway Patrol. You know, so the problem is Purdue can't go and say, all right, let's get the best trooper or the best, you know, leader from any other state patrol or state police and bring them in, or the police chief of Charlotte or the police chief of Raleigh or somebody like that, and bring them into the Highway Patrol, because you have to have had experience within the patrol to lead the patrol.
It will be interesting to see what happens then if someone chooses not to sign the ethics standards. And of course, the question is, if they fail to meet the ethics standards, is it just a simple, shall we say, misdemeanor, or will they be facing some serious felony charges as well, such as lying under oath or something of that nature? Chris, looking at the budget, it is interesting. I read 2 days ago about IBM announcing the addition of 600 jobs to their campus there in Research Triangle Park. I'm intrigued that in the process, the state is going to provide them with an $8 million incentive. Did IBM suffer some financial calamity that I'm not aware of?
No, IBM is actually, you know, one of the thriving, profitable businesses, yet this seems to continue to be the mode. I mean, you look at the other incentive bills that are still waiting to be passed tonight and tomorrow for the General Assembly. They're giving tax breaks to, you know, the struggling small businesses like Microsoft or Fidelity Bank. You know, these are Caterpillar. You know, these are the small mom-and-pop businesses they're worried about growing.
Yeah, well, I talked to Keith Crisco. I shouldn't say a talk. I asked Keith Crisco, the commissioner for the Department of Commerce, North Carolina Department of Commerce, about that very subject. He spent the better part of, a 45-minute speech talking about, or 30-minute speech, talking about how the state was working to attract major businesses. And I was the first questioner after it was all said and done. And I said, what about the effort to grow the small businesses in North Carolina, the independent business, the independent operators? And he said, well, that was a very sensitive nerve for him, because he was once a small business owner and operator as well. And then went on to talk about, again, all the support they're providing major corporations to move into the state, and in the process said the downside is they bring very few jobs with them. Well, what's the purpose? Our guest, Chris Hayes of the JWP Civitas Institute, nccivitas.org is the website. Before we go to this break, let's go to Tom in Pitt County. Tom, welcome to Viewpoints. Yes, sir.
You know, I heard the earlier segment, and man, I could chime in a thousand things on it. But this last one with the governor, the poor governor, come on, give me a break. You mean with all the highway patrolmen and supervisor there that we can't hire from within and find a very qualified person? We got to go outside of our state? Bunk. I don't buy that.
Well,
maybe the governor, just maybe the governor, might ought to consider somebody that's not a Democrat that's in the highway patrol.
But
the thing is, she's going to promote only somebody that is a rank-and-file Democrat and a big supporter.
Tom, you do not remember the problem within the Republican Party where you have this culture of corruption. You don't have that in the Democrat Party. Excuse me? The point of the matter is the vast majority of patrolmen know in order to get selected just to first-line sergeant, you've got to play political hold hands, politically speaking. Stay with us for a minute on that one, Tom. Chris,
right.
What's your observation on that?
Well, you know, there is politics in this. And you look at who the governor's promoted, you know, Glover, to lead the Highway Patrol. He's an old buddy of hers.
Yeah.
She promoted him to his position in New Bern, had him transferred back to New Bern with her, and has basically shepherded him up the ranks. You know, she's got her good old buddy in to lead the Highway Patrol. So, you know, it's just a culture of cronyism. And the thing about going outside the patrol is it gets you a new voice. It gets somebody, and, you know, and right now she can't do that. She can't bring anybody with fresh ideas or fresh, you know, a fresh vision on it, because she's not allowed to. And I think sometimes you need that. You know, sometimes you can't always promote, you know, the next chairman of IBM or, you know, CEO from within. Sometimes you got to get a new voice, a new vision in there. And I think that's what the patrol needs at this point.
All right, Tom, back to you. And I'm going to get you to comment on the earlier discussions we had, just to sort of brighten the day here. But let me get your observation regarding Chris's remarks.
Well, as far as the highway patrol, again, I'm going to go back to, is it a case of where she can't or she won't? Remember when Governor Hunt was in there, if you were a highway patrolman and you were anything other than a loyal Democrat, he did everything he could get rid of you. And I know that for personal fact, because I know a couple of highway patrolmen that were Republicans that they trumped up charges just to make their life so miserable that they either were terminated or they just quit on their own because of politics. And so I think if she doesn't pick somebody that's qualified, that's within the state, that has fresh ideas, she's not looking very hard.
All right. With that said, before we go to this break, I want to hear what your observations were about the earlier program we were talking about.
Well, I mean, it's just like with oil and stuff like that, where offshore drilling, and I heard some of the comments that were made by one of the caller ends, that the way I look at this is pretty much like you do. But the fact is, BP did not put in a safety valve. You know, we can play this blame game all we want. I agree with you. The blame game doesn't solve anything. But, you know, they didn't put in a safety valve. Why didn't they put in this extra safety valve? Because the Obama administration said they didn't need it.
Well,
now, but the other part of this that really gets me is that this whole argument is going to be brought up in the upcoming election about the greedy capitalist society, and with some justification on BP, because quite frankly, some of their decisions were basic greed.
No question. And I just to go as we wrap things up before we go to this break, Tom, the issue here is, and we were I was criticized by a caller, and Louisiana has been criticized by callers as well, and others, letter writers, on the fact that they said, where is the government when you need them? And folks called in here and said, wait a second, this is contrary to your popular comments, Lockwood, that you think that government has no business in this. My response is, first off, it's in federal waters. Two, government is responsible, as we do with even local governments. We have building inspectors to assure every individual an equal playing field, that when a good building inspector walks in, he's looking at it not only for the benefit of the homeowner, and we're talking about a house being built, he's looking at it for the benefit of the community as well, so that the house is stable and that it won't necessarily cause unnecessary calls to the fire department, for example. The problem we have here is, again, everybody wants to assess blame. We need to first assess solutions. After we get the solutions done, we'll deal with the blame. The problem is that the media, I'm very disturbed by this, the major media. We were talking last night with Dale Benoit of the Plaquemines Gazette there in Plaquemines, Louisiana. They're covering the real personal loss, the real difficulties, the real story. The major media, they're looking again to address and assess blame. We need solutions, and I'm very, very, very angry about this administration, about Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, folks.
I agree with you.
They have done nothing but to assess blame. Tom, I appreciate the call, and thanks for your participation today, sir.
All right, see you.
Have
Bye.
A great weekend. Our guest, Chris Hayes of the JWP Civitas Institute. Chris, I'm curious, when we get back with you, what impact is all of this having, one, on this administration, that is Purdue administration, or they do look alike, a lot alike. What is this, same people, nothing's changed. What impact has this had on the Purdue administration, but also what impact is this having on the legislature? Stay tuned for more here on Viewpoints. All right. The question to our guest, Chris Hayes, here on Viewpoints. Of course, Lockwood behind the mic. Chris behind the phone there as he's making his way to Asheville for a special JWP Civitas Institute candidates forum. Chris, what impact will this legislative session have, first, on the governor's poll numbers, which aren't doing very well, but You know, again, I don't understand that, because the governor has so little to do with so much that's taking place.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, her poll numbers first went upside down last year when the General Assembly session went in. So, and that was, a lot of that was due to the tax increases and the pay cut she issued for state employees and teachers. But this year's been kind of, she's been out of it. She's been kind of tame. And, you know, she hasn't been at the forefront of things, and her poll numbers are basically staying where they are. And I think she's missed an opportunity here to get out and lead on a number of issues, to get her poll numbers back up.
Well, she's tried to lead on the Highway Patrol, but it sure hasn't resonated very well, and a lot of us are a little jaded. All right, what about the legislature itself? The legislature, of course, has been fighting over ethics, which, interestingly enough, is something that they were decrying needed to be solved. And then you add to this a budget mess that, quite frankly, is going to be handed back to the governor. Will the legislature have any fallout from this, or feel any fallout?
Oh, you know, they played it real safe this year, and I've called this session and this budget a very politically safe budget. And it seems like they've just kind of, you know, they've done some little things so they can say they saved teachers' jobs. You know, we'll overlook the fact that they raided the lottery fund to do that, and they did some very, very small, almost with no impact, tax cuts for small businesses. So they can say they can go back home and say they cut taxes, but basically they've ignored big issues, and they just basically kicked the can down the road so they can get through the elections and hopefully, for the Democrats' sake, be in charge again in 2011 to try to tackle those issues.
Well, the concern is we have federal money that may not be coming in. We also have services that are being cut, particularly in social services. Will that not have a negative impact on this legislative body?
You know, we've polled that a couple times. We've asked people, have you felt the cuts? You know, have you noticed any reduction in services? And, you know, two-thirds to three-fourths of people say no, they haven't. So it's obvious, you know, there's a lot of belly aching over the budget cuts, but people aren't feeling anything. So it shows they're only eliminating the kind of waste and stuff in government that could be gotten rid of without people really feeling it.
Well, it's going to be of interest. Later in the program, we're going to be talking with Jeff Shaw of the Budget and Tax Center, well, actually of the North Carolina Justice Center, and he's going to report on a report from Elaine Mejia, which notes that the state is, if in fact, reducing some of its services to those who can least who are in the greatest need, and I'm going to be intrigued to see if the progressive, read that, liberal community might be taking umbrage with this this past legislative session. Chris, I look forward to talking to you next week. Of course, by then we hope the legislature will be out of session. Is there a good indication that's going to happen?
They will be finished up tomorrow. They will adjourn either sometime well after midnight, or then maybe they'll come back around lunchtime tomorrow. But tomorrow will be the last day.
Well, they will have taken care of one of the state's worst problems, video gambling. Of course, you can still go out and buy lottery tickets, but that's not gambling, is it? Well, we'll find out a little later on in that. Our thanks to Chris Hayes of the JWP Civitas Institute, who's on his way to Asheville. Stay tuned. Up next, another hour of Viewpoints. We're going to be talking about, well, terminal groins, and what about the liberal approach to the budget?